Okay, so the parasha this week, and you know, it's a special parasha vis-a-vis. It's the last will and testament that Yaakov gives to his children, and to Yosef specifically. He gives his last will and testament, and you know, Ted, you know, you get it again, right? The Haftorah also is the last will and testament of David HaMelech to Shlomo. Right, it's the last instructions. That's even when you look at the Haftorah tomorrow, you'll see it's the chapter 2. I mentioned this last week. It's chapter 2 of the Book of Kings, number 1. And it's David about to pass away. The Pesukim are actually very interesting. They're almost identical in terms of the description of the approaching of the last moment. In the Parasha, page 268 in the Art Scroll, it's verse 29. V'yikrevu yemei Yisrael lamus, and the days of Israel came close to dying. Yisrael is Yaakov. The days of Yaakov, Yisrael, were coming close to passing away. And the Haftorah, the wording of the Haftorah, is also at the beginning, the very first words, V'yikrevu yemei David lamus, the days of David were coming close to pass away. And you know, so this is, and in the Haftorah, so David HaMelech is telling Shlomo instructions. He's giving him instructions that when you run the kingdom of Israel, you should run it according to the Torah law. Make sure that the Jewish people are following the mitzvahs, following the laws. And he also gives other instructions as well about various different rebels in his kingdom, and also people he wants Shlomo to be able to repay the kindness that he gave to David. But that's the theme of the Haftorah, and this is the theme of the parasha as well. The last will and testament of Yaakov to his children. Now, the first instruction which Yaakov gives, is make sure that I'm buried in Eretz Yisrael. Please make sure that even when I pass away, please take me right away to Eretz Yisrael to be buried in the Maros HaMachpelah, the cave of Machpelah in Hebron. I want to be buried together with Yitzchak, my father, and Avraham Avinu, my grandfather. And that was his instruction. That was the primary, you know, instruction which he gave. And then in addition to that, he also goes on to want to give brachas to Ephraim and Manasseh. That's a famous part of the story. And then also the brachas in general to all of the Shvatim, to all of the sons. That's the theme of the parasha. But I want to focus in on this instruction that he gives to him, that he should be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So again, Pasuk 29 says, V'yikru v'yimei Yisrael lamus v'yikru levino Yosef. He called to Yosef, his son, and he said to him, Im no matzos yichein be'inecha, if I found favor in your eyes, simna yodacha tachas yirechi, please put your hand underneath my leg, v'asisa imadi, and perform for me chesed ve'emes. Please perform for me a chesed and an emes, a kindness and a truth, namely, al no, please do not sigbereni b'Mitzrayim. Please do not bury me in Mitzrayim. Please do not bury me in Egypt. Okay, so chesed ve'emes, chesed ve'emes. So what is the chesed ve'emes? Chesed, kindness, ve'emes is the two words. Now chesed, we understand. Do this chesed for me. What's the emes though? What is the idea of emes, of truth? So this is a it's a well-known Rashi. Rashi quotes from the Medrash that Rashi says the MS, the truth of doing this, Rashi says, is chesed she'osin imameisim. It's the chesed that we do with the deceased. Who chesed shel MS, it's a chesed of MS, it's a chesed of truth. She'ena mitzapa letashlum gumor. Because the person who's doing the chesed does not expect any recompense. You don't get anything back. There's no, you know, return on the investment, so to speak. The person's not going to help you out when you do this chesed for him because he's passed away already. But this is a very famous expression. There are organizations named this chesed shel emes because of the importance of doing the proper procedures and taking care of the deceased in the proper way, according to the kosher way, and burial, etc., not cremation, etc. That's the, and it's chesed shel emes. It's a kindness of truth. The truth is even in the word emes, is alluded to this idea that the Ksav Sofer says that in the word MS, are the letters Aleph Mem Tov, which he says is Eini. Aleph is Eini. I do not mitzapeh, look towards Tashlum, any type of recompense. So in the word also, you have that little bit of a remez to that as well. Another thing that Baal HaTorim says is that the word emes also alludes to the three ingredients in the burial, in the actual burial itself, the three things which are necessary for the burial. In the actual burial is a aron, which is the coffin, and the bier, which is the mitah, the bier, which I learned was actually different to a coffin. I found out that the bier is the platform, and then the tof is tachrichin, the shrouds. So that's in the, you know, that's there. So, you know, so this is what the emphasis is over here. Chesed ve'emes, it's a kindness and it's a truth, and it's an emes because he's not expecting anything back in recompense, right? So that's one interpretation of what it means. Another interpretation, because the truth is that every time you do anything for the deceased is by definition a chesed shlemes, because based upon this understanding, you know, that you're not getting anything back from the person who you're helping out after they passed away. So by definition, any time you do anything for the deceased, anytime you go through, provide them a proper burial or anything else, you fulfill their wishes, intrinsically it's a chesed shel emes. So for the pasuk to say it's a chesed and an emes, it's not really necessary, because every chesed you do for the deceased intrinsically is a chesed of truth, because there's no recompense. So why did the pasuk have to emphasize it's a chesed and emes? Every chesed for the deceased is a chesed of emes. There's no extra lesson learned from the word emes by saying this. So this is a question that Ksav Sofer asks, and he says that he suggests that the reason is because he suggests a different understanding of the word emes, of truth. You see, emes, we've said this before, emes also means alignment. On a more conceptual level, emes means alignment. The word emes, if you jumble the letters around, you get the word tu'um, which is a twin. Because emes is the conceptual definition of emes is when your words are aligned with the facts. Right, when your words are aligned with the facts, and then you are repeating over what really happened accurately, then those words are MS. So the word MS means perfect alignment. Perfect alignment. So how does that apply over here? Because the alignment can manifest itself in many different ways. Another area in which we have to be aligned is our insides have to be aligned with our outsides. Right, our insides have to be aligned with our outsides. So when we do a mitzvah, we should do it with a full heart and a joy and a desire on the inside. So when we do a mitzvah, a mitzvah should be done with emes. We should do the mitzvah with an emesdika feel to it. Not just go through the motions of doing the mitzvah, not just to fulfill my obligation. Person gives tzedakah, for example, sometimes, or chesed. You do chesed sometimes with people. You do it begrudgingly. You know, many times we are doing it not with a full heart. That's a lack of emes. So a chesed of emes is a chesed that you're doing it with a full heart and a desire and an enthusiasm and a joy. That's a chesed of emes. Why does Yaakov emphasize this over here? Because think about Yosef. He's the viceroy of Mitzrayim. He's the most important second in command of Egypt, such an important person. Surely he would want to have his father buried in Mitzrayim. Surely he'd want to give the covert. Surely he'd want the people of Mitzrayim to have the honor and have the opportunity to visit the grave of the patriarch, you know, Jacob, their viceroy's father inside Egypt, and certainly the family as well, the brothers. You want the, I mean, this is an interesting question halachically. Where's the ideal place to be buried in general? I mean, there's a big value of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. For many people get buried in Eretz Yisrael, even though the families are over here. Right, and it's a tension, because on the one hand there's a tremendous value of being buried in Eretz Yisrael, in the Holy Land. Your body goes back to the holiness of the earth of Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, being very far away from family members who are able to go and visit the grave is a bit of a compromise. So you have different opinions. Is it better to go to a place where your family is and people can come and visit the grave and pray at the grave, etc.? Or is it better to go to Eretz Yisrael and be buried over there? That's a debate. That's a discussion, not for now. But you can understand, you can appreciate why Yosef would have a little bit of an ambivalence to bury his father in Eretz Canaan, to take him all the way there, to be far away and not to be given the covet of having Yaakov be buried in Mitzrayim, plus not having the people of Mitzrayim visit the tomb of Yaakov, and suddenly the family not being able to go there to visit, has to go far away. So Yaakov was preempting a little bit of a reluctance. A little bit of reluctance and ambivalence on the part of Yosef, that he may not necessarily have an emistic desire, right, to bury his father in Eretz Canaan. So he says to make sure, do this chesed for me and do it in emes. It may be difficult for you, but please try to bury me with an emistic, a feeling of joy and desire and honor towards me, because this is what I want, right? That's what the Ksav Sofer says. I thought, actually, I had my own thought on this, why the emphasis on MS. I think it's very, perhaps, unfortunately, more true today, because we are seeing today, in our day and age, the percentage of cremations. I saw, I may have been mistaken, but 50%, apparently, 50% of Jews in America or in the secular world are doing cremation. It's a horrific, terrible tragedy. It's a tragedy. It's so forbidden, so bad, and we're not going to go into it right now in terms of all of the different dimensions of how bad it is, but we know cremation is a very, very, and I emphasize this and encourage anyone who knows anybody, I forgot to bring, amongst all of the other things which went wrong this morning, I forgot to bring these pamphlets which I have, which I would like to give out to people. Not that you need it yourselves, but these are pamphlets which are useful to be able to give to other people you may know are considering cremation. It's a very, very bad thing. And, you know, but what's one of the, I mean, I've heard this, unfortunately, from, you know, some distant family members, that when I try to discourage a cremation of a certain family member a number of years ago, and here's the refrain, that this is what my father wanted. How could I dishonor my parents? How could I, and especially if they're close to the parents, how could I dishonor the wishes of my parents, right? And the mistake they're making is a chesed of falsehood. Mm. It's a chesed of falsehood, because chesed has to be done with truth. Chesed always has to be done. What's chesed to us may not really be chesed. Chesed, like, for example, we say, in the morning, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, in our davening in the morning, when we cite a passage from the Mishnah, Braisa, that all these different mitzvahs of kindness we're supposed to do, we say it in our davening in the morning, all these different mitzvahs of kindness. But then it says at the end, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, that the learning of Torah is equivalent to all of these mitzvahs of chesed. So one interpretation means, the one interpretation is not that Talmud Torah is equal to all these mitzvahs, but Talmud Torah is keneged. The word keneged means should be facing. Torah should always be facing your chesed. Torah should always be facing the chesed. Halacha should always be facing the chesed. Halacha, what the right way of doing it is, the way the chesed should be done. So chesed is not based upon what I feel, what I think is right, and what I think is good to do, what the person wants. We always have to measure the chesed in terms of, is this what the Torah wants? Is the Talmud Torah facing this chesed, instructing me and guiding me to know how to do this chesed? And especially when it comes to cremation, because and people's last wishes, you want to honor this person, you know, it's your last opportunity to do something with this individual who passed away. It's a very strong pull. And even if the children would themselves say, we would never get cremated ourselves, we would never do that, we understand Judaism want that, but how can I dishonor my parents? All the chesed they did for me in my lifetime, how can I not do this chesed for them? To which this pasuk says, make sure that chesed has to be done with emes. And that's what Yaakov, it's alluding to over here. It's a chesed of emes, chesed with emes. Make sure this chesed is done with emes, the burial and the last wishes of the parents be done with emes. And sometimes what they're asking for is not really what the Torah wants. And I said this before, that, you know, after a person passes away, the consciousness continues, the awareness of the soul continues on, and the individual who requested to be cremated will be screaming on the other side saying, do not cremate me. Do not cremate me. You can guarantee that. And they'll be screaming out, do what's right. Do what's right. Don't do what I told you to do. Do a chesed with emes. Do a chesed shel emes. So I didn't see that anywhere. That's my own understanding. But the idea, what I just said, is 100% true. Whether or not that's the kavana in the Torah, you know, that's you know, but it could be a remes to that as well. That's another understanding of it. The understanding of this pasuk, which really, I guess, blew me away, is a sefer over here called Teferet Shlomo. And Teferet Shlomo is one of the Hasidic Sfarim, one of the Rebbes of previous generations. Actually, it wasn't so far long ago. I think he passed away in the 1950s or 60s. But it's quite a famous sefer. And he explains, really, the chesed of emes. Again, the question he asks is according to Rashi's understanding, Rashi says that the chesed of emes over here is, he says to Yosef, do this chesed of truth, because fulfilling the wishes of the deceased is a chesed of truth, because there's no recompense. You don't get, there's no ROI on your chesed that you do for the individual. You know, you don't get anything back. It's a chesed of altruism. You're doing it altruistically. You're helping the person. You're doing this chesed for this person. You're not getting anything back. He's not going to repay you. It's an altruistic chesed. So asks the Teferet Shlomo, he says, who cares? Why would Yaakov care that Yosef do it altruistically? Why would he care that he do it altruistically and do it and not have any interest in some kind of kickback in doing it? As long as he gets buried in Eretz Kadam, you know, why does Yaakov care whether or not Yosef should or shouldn't get any kind of kickback for doing this? All he cares about is make sure I'm buried in Eretz Kadam. Whether you get a benefit from it, you don't get a benefit, it my nafkamina, as they say. What difference does it make to me? Why does Yaakov care whether or not Yosef is going to benefit from doing this chesed for me, of burying me in Eretz Canaan? That's his question. It's a good question. You know, so we always talk about chesed shel emes, do it altruistically. You know, whatever the need is, do it. And who cares whether or not this, me, vis-a-vis, okay, let me get a bit clearer. Vis-a-vis me who's doing it, right? Yeah, so I should do altruistically. But why would Yaakov demand that? Yaakov was asking Yosef, do this chesed for me. But you should do it altruistically. Why should he do it altruistically? As long as he gets buried in Eretz Canaan, why does he care? That's his question. So because of this, he suggests a whole new understanding of it, right? And we have to brace ourselves, because we're going to go into Kabbalah world right now, right? And we're going to go into the world of reincarnation. And I saw that. I knew Steve's head would suddenly lift it up, right? Reincarnation. We're going to go into an area which is beyond our understanding. And truly, when I was looking at this last night, when I was reading this explanation last night, I was fascinated by it, but I thought to myself, am I going to say this? How can I? This is going to be, it's like I'm going into dangerous territory by sharing this idea. And I'm going into dangerous territory by sharing this idea, but it's such a fascinating idea. And then at the end of the piece, of the essay, the mime which I was looking at, which was explaining this, at the end, all of a sudden, like he almost like puts a nice little bow on the whole thing and brings out a really, really beautiful inspirational message from it. So after I read that little paragraph at the end, I said, I've got to share it. So we're first going to go into the territory of Gilgal Neshamas, of reincarnation. And reincarnation is we've spoken about that many times before. Reincarnation, basic idea, when a person's born, we get a neshama. Our neshama is introduced to the person when we're born. But then when we pass away, the neshama can come back. And in fact, many scholars say that the vast majority of people born today are reincarnated, recycled souls. We're all recycled. We've been here before. We recycle neshamas. And that's the idea of Gilgal neshamas. We come back again. We come back again. Or, you know, we shouldn't have to come back again. We should be able to go up to Gan Eden and receive the reward and be there with our Kadosh Baruch Hu for all of eternity. But that's the concept of a Gilgal Neshamas. This unto itself a very big subject. However, there is another dimension of reincarnation. There's another type of reincarnation which is called Ibor Neshamas. Ibor Neshamas, Ibor is the word pregnancy, right? Pregnancy. And it's a concept where even when a person's alive, another neshama could come down and attach itself to the person who's alive today. That's another. That's called Ibn Neshama. The truth is, this is the source of the topic of deep of a dibuk, right? The dibuk, you know, the book called the dibuk, and it's a concept where a deceased soul becomes attached and entangled into the soul of a person who's alive and could cause horrific torment, terrible. To, you know, everything comes from Jewish sources. The Exorcist, you know, comes from this. That comes from the idea of a dibuk. But the last recorded stories of a dibuk, I think, whether in the 1920s or 30s, there's a very famous story with the Chofetz Chaim and Elchanan Wasserman and other famous rabbis in 1940s or 50s, 30s, whatever it was. And even today, actually, I remember now, about 15 or so years ago, there was an episode in Israel, in the city in Israel, where there was apparently a person who was possessed by a dibuk, right? But the technical term of the possession and the attachment of a soul to a person is called ibor, which is pregnancy, because you become impregnated with an additional soul. That's the dark side of ibor. But there's a very bright side of ibor, which the Kabbalists speak about, and that is that the neshama of past souls, of righteous people, can become attached to a person in order to spur them on and to help them in their avodas Hashem. There's such a concept, right, that a person could actually be zocha, can merit to experience an actual attachment and attachment of a soul, of somewhat of a righteous person, specifically when a person makes an effort themselves to try to reach a certain level themselves, and they may not be able to get there by themselves, but they get the merit of the additional soul of this person, this tzaddik, this righteous person, to come along and aid them in the process of their journey. And this is, again, recorded by these sources, but also alluded to. The Zohar says, for example, there's a few sources like this in the Zohar Chodesh, where the Pasuk says, it's not good for man to be alone. The Pasuk says at the beginning of Bereishis, it's not good for man to be alone. Now, the Pasha Pshat is that Hashem then made woman, right? Man was made by himself, then he made woman. It's not good for man to be alone. I will make a helpmate. I'll make a helper for him. Says the Zohar, that that's an allusion to, I'll make a helper. It's not good for man to be alone. He needs a helper. He needs the neshamas of other souls to come in to be able to help him along in the process. That's straight from the Zohar. Ibn Neshama. Another example is Haba L'Tayher. We've quoted this one a few times already. Haba L'Tayher Messiahian Oso. Someone who makes an attempt to purify himself, who makes the first effort, they help him. That's literally what the Gemara says. They help him. So we've said before, the Marsha says, for example, that it refers to angels, malachim help him along the way. The Zohar says also other neshamas, the neshamas of righteous people who come because he's now making an effort, he's making the first step, he's zocha to get an attachment of an ibun neshama of a righteous person to now help him along in the process. And that's mesayayin oso, plural, they help him, the other neshamas. The Yerushalmi and Psachim says the one who begins a mitzvah, maskel b'mitzvah, omrim lo gemur. Someone who begins to do a mitzvah, they say to him, finish it. Don't just start the mitzvah and give up halfway through. When you start a mitzvah, finish it already. Don't, you know, finish the job. But it says, they say, omrim lo, they say to him, finish it. Who's saying to him? The neshamas, which he started the mitzvah, he's already empowered himself by doing the mitzvah. He gets the extra siyata d'shmaya, or the extra help, empowerment of these extra neshamas, and they say, finish it off. And also Pirkei Avos, it says, your house should be a meeting place for the wise. All of these have very, very simple level understanding. So we could delve into these statements unto themselves and, you know, and get an inspiration and a lesson. Your house should be a meeting place for the wise. Your house should be a meeting place for chachamim. In general, this is just a general idea. You know, you be the address when righteous people or chachamim come to the town, come to the city. It's a tremendous virtue for you, your house to be the place where they come and visit and they meet people over there. But the Tefer Shlomo says, another interpretation, your house should be a meeting place for the wise, as it says in Mishlei, because the home is built with wisdom, and the home is a metaphor for the neshama, for the soul. Your home your neshama is the home. So your neshama should be a meeting place for the wise, righteous souls that can become attached to you through this concept of Ibn Neshama when you make the first step, right? These are the ideas. it's reported the Arizal, the Arizal, we know who the Arizal was from Tzfas, and there was a time when there was a famous rabbi, Rishmul Diazida, that was his name, Rishmul Diazida, the author of Medrash Shmuel. When he was young, right, when he was much younger, he came and visited the Arizal. And the Arizal, when he came into the room, he suddenly stood up and greeted him, stood up tall. And even though this Rav Shmuel was much younger and less of a scholar than the Arizal, but the Arizal stood up very tall for him. So Rav Chaim Vital, the student of the Arizal, said, "Why, you know, why did you do this? Why you stand up so tall for this person? He's younger than you." So he said, "Because I saw the neshama of Rav Pinchas ben Yair hovering over his head." Rav Pinchas ben Yair is the author of the famous formula of the ladder of growth that the Mesillas Yesharim builds his entire sefer around. That the Torah leads to zehirus, to watchfulness. Watchfulness leads to zrizus, to alacrity. Alacrity leads to etc. and precious and abstinence and kedusha etc. Ruach Hakodesh and tchias amesim. It's a very, very beautiful passage of a ladder of growth that the human being is capable of going along to reach the highest level of tchias amesim. But this is Rav Pinchas ben Yair, who authored that statement. His neshama was hovering over Rav Shmuel the Ozida's head. And that's what the Arizal saw. He saw the neshama of the Rav Pinchas ben Yair in him. Again, Ibn neshama. There was an Ibn neshama on the person. You know, the Shem Mishmuel, another source says that the concept of Ibn neshama, perhaps, is like the sun. The sun is shining in the sky. The rays of light of the sun radiate out without diminishing the sun, right? At least, that's what I understand, right? The sun doesn't get diminished by the rays of light radiating out, but you're experiencing the sunlight. So the rays of the deceased neshama can still radiate into a person, even though the neshama is still in its place. That's one dimension. It's one level, he says, of this idea of Ibn neshama. But sometimes it can even rise to a level where the actual neshama does descend down into the person. Whatever, again, beyond our pay grade. Beyond our pay, it's above us, right? And that's why I was reluctant to go into this, right? But it is conceptually, it's a fascinating idea, and it's a true idea. This is a basic idea to which we learn about in the Sfarim of Ibn Neshamas. How does it relate to how does the Teferet Shlomo use this to explain the Chesed Shel Emes of doing for the deceased? So what was the question? The question is that. You know, is that why does Yaakov care? Actually, no, I'll take that back. The question was another question, which I forgot to ask. And that is, is it really possible for a person to even do such an altruistic act of chesed? We always have some kind of ulterior motive. And even if it may be the reward we're going to get from the mitzvah, right, the chesed we're doing, is there really any altruism? So he says the altruism is not referring to the person who's doing the chesed for the deceased. But rather, the altruism is the chesed which the deceased is doing for the person who's alive. In other words, the language of Rashi says, chesed, the chesed, listen carefully to the words, chesed she'osin im ha'mesim. The chesed that they do with those who have passed away is a chesed of truth because he's not looking to get any kind of payback. You could read it like this. The chesed that they're doing together with the deceased, the chesed you're doing together with the aid and the empowerment of the deceased soul that has come into you, right? That's called chesed of emes, not by virtue of your altruism, but the altruism of the deceased soul, because the deceased soul doesn't have any ulterior motives. We are influenced by our body. We're influenced by our desires. So our chesed can never really be totally altruistic. It's impossible for our chesed to be totally, totally altruistic. So therefore, it's never going to be altruistic. So where's the chesed of truth and the altruism of chesed? It's the chesed which is being done by the deceased soul helping you in your chesed, whatever mitzvah you're doing. He's doing it, but he's doing it altruistically. So chesed shel emes, it's not the literal pshat of the Rashi. I mean, there's no question. It's not the literal meaning of what he said, but it's the idea it's a segue to this idea of how the neshamas of the deceased become attached to us to aid us in our efforts, to aid us in our journey. And that, for them, for that neshama, it's altruistic, it's emes. It's an altruistic chesed because they certainly have no ulterior motive in doing this chesed for us and helping us along our way. Our chesed we do for the deceased is always going to be intermingled with some kind of lack of altruism. But the chesed of the deceased is going to be altruistic. That's the chesed shlemes. So this is the idea, right? This is the idea. This is how it plugs into this. Again, it's a bit kind of out there in terms of, you know, appreciating on a pragmatic level. And when I read through it, it was fascinating. It's MS, right? It's MS. It's Taurus MS. But, you know, I was hesitant. And then the last comment of the person who quoted this, who was, his name is Rabbi Avram Weinroth. He's actually, he's lived in Eretz Israel. So he, when he quoted this whole explanation, he said at the end, and let's see if I'll read the words, because I think this is really, you know, I think the take-home message from this is the following. He says, many times in life, we have assignments, responsibilities, which feel so overwhelming and too difficult for us to be able to fulfill. And we all go through this, challenges, different situations, different responsibilities. And there are so many times we just feel overwhelmed by our responsibilities. A person throws his arms up in despair. How can I do this? How can I get through this challenge? How can I perform this task? How can I do this assignment? It's very difficult, let alone another assignment which I see is coming down the road. It's just too much for me. And we're always faced with these. Now, what do we do? What's the answer? We daven. We daven to Hashem. We seek siyata d'shmaya. We seek help from heaven. You know, and that's always the attitude we have to. Seek siyata d'shmaya, beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should help us along the way. But those words, beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he should help us along the way. And he does. And that's the axiom of our belief. We daven to Hashem, he helps us. One of the ways which Hashem helps us, which is being revealed through this, one of the ways that we are helped is we actually get, there's a concept that the neshama gets empowered. The neshama gets empowered by the neshama of a tzaddik who's passed away. Could be an alter zeda, a very righteous person in your family, who may come down and help you. If you make the first effort, you're not alone. We're not alone. You know, it's a little bit harder to relate to the abstract, you know, non-relatable nature of Hashem. Hashem is beyond us, but we can relate to righteous people. We can relate to human beings. We can relate to tzaddikim. We can picture great tzaddikim have lived and have passed away. We can suddenly picture the people in our lives and our great-great-grandparents, perhaps grandparents who are very, very righteous and pious people. There's such a concept of Ibn Neshama. There's such a concept of a neshama of a deceased coming down and attaching himself to a person who's making the first effort. There's such a concept. And that's a very, very consoling and comforting, encouraging idea. So he says, when a person is feeling, I can't do it, you can't. Well, you can do it because you can get siyata d'shmaya. I'll help you, Hashem says. But I also provide in my world, in my universe, a phenomenon called Ibn Neshama. I provide a mechanism of Ibn Neshama with the neshama of a deceased person, righteous person. Like what you want to now do, like what you have to now do, will come down and help you and aid you and turbo power you in the process. And therefore, don't give up. If a person does things which is fitting, he's not doing it by himself. You're not alone. Yachad imo, together with him, stand lofty neshamas from the upper worlds that can become attached to you and help you, and they're going to come to aid you and pick you up and lift you up in your assignment to help you along in the process. Yachad im chesed, together with the chesed, comes the chesed from the Olam HaEmes, from the world of truth, and helps you along the way. It's a beautiful idea and a very encouraging idea, right? Coming from this concept. So even if we don't understand, we shouldn't expect to understand the intricacies of Ibn Neshama and Gilgul Neshama, all of these esoteric topics, but there's such an idea. And the idea is that one of the ways that Siyata Jishmaya can come our way is through this method and can help us. And, you know, I'll tell you a personal story. Last when I was preparing for the shiur last night, and you know, in my regular way, I'm looking at this sefer, looking at that sefer, you know, looking for the right kind of mimer essay discussion, which kind of resonates with me, because if it doesn't resonate with me, you know, I can't teach it. So I've got to make it sure it resonates with me. And I was last night, I was really like having a hard time. I couldn't find something which, you know, clicked with me. And I'll tell you, like, oh, what am I going to do? Right? Hashem, help me. Right? And then at that point, I opened up the Sefer. And I saw this Sefer, and I this whole essay caught my attention. And that's when I thought to myself that, it sounds really interesting, but it's so like out there, like that, you know, I can't really share this idea with everyone. And at the end, right, he says this whole thing over here, when you throw your arms up in despair and you think you can't do it, you know, who knows, there's a Nibu and the Shama taking place, he'll get Siyata Deshmaya, he'll empower you to do it. I said, that's it. That's my share for this morning. and that's it. So it's a very, it's great. It's a very important idea. And that's what we listen. You know, just we, again, the answer, the lesson is never give up and never, you're not alone. We're not alone. And especially, you know, when you think, reflect back on the neshamas, on holy people that we know in our families, but holy people of our ancestors who are really out there, so to speak, really rooting for us. They want us to succeed. They want us to grow. They want us to do mitzvahs. They want us to become more and more and more. I'll say on Wednesday night, right? On Wednesday night, we were learning this past Wednesday about the tefillah of Shlomo HaMelech, this incredibly long tefillah. I think it was like 40 or 50 verses long. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Not the class to come to, right? So on Wednesday, so we're going through a chapter a week of the prophets, and so we learned about this, about how at the completion of the Beis HaMikdash, it's a tremendous celebration and all sorts of sacrifices, thousands of sacrifices brought, and it's just jubilations and celebration. In the midst of all of that, Shlomo Melech issues this really long tefillah, tremendously long tefillah in prayer to Hashem to help the Jewish people, to protect us, to save us, and all only good things should happen. It's a beautiful tefillah. But within the tefillah is the following words. He says, and if the Jewish people, if the Jewish people should ever be exiled to the four corners of the world and be in foreign countries and be persecuted over there, and they pray to you, and they daven to you, and they do teshuva over there, please make it easy for them. And that's the word, please make it easier for them. And even if they don't necessarily deserve redemption at the time, please at least soften the difficulty of their experience in Galus. When they do teshuva, when they pray, when they do teshuva, please soften soften their experience in Galus. That's what he says. So I was thinking to myself when I was reading this, I didn't share this on Wednesday night, but I was thinking to myself, you know, imagine for a moment you went into the basement of your house, if you have a basement, right? And you go into the basement, and there's a box, you find a box inside the basement, and inside the box, an old box, and inside you open the box, and inside the box, there's this really, really old book. It's almost crumbling in your fingers. It's so old. It's from the 1600s. It's from an Alter Zedes, from an old, great, 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 great grandfather that was passed down as an heirloom through the family for generations. And this book is crumbling in your fingers, and you're opening up so carefully. You remember that you had this book. You start reading the words. And inside the words are, these are the words of your Alter Zeder. And it's a prayer. It's this journal. It's this personal journal. And in these words, he's praying, he's expressing his wishes and desire and aspiration and his tefillas that his children and his grandchildren and his great-great-grandchildren should walk in the ways of Hashem, right? And that's what you're reading. And if the person who's opening up this book, right, is not walking in the ways of Hashem, let's say the person who is opening up the book is someone who's drifted away, who's drifted away and doesn't have any Judaism or mitzvahs in his life, and he's reading in this book, and his Alter Zeder is saying, please Hashem, may my children, my grandchildren, my great-great-grandchildren walk in your ways, perform mitzvahs and do teshuva and pray to you. How will that great-great-grandson feel when he's reading those words? He's going to feel so embarrassed. He's going to feel ashamed. You know, this is what my grandfather was writing. He was writing that I should. He's writing this to me. These words are for me. That I should be the. I should do teshuva. That I should be righteous. I should walk in the ways of Hashem. How can I not fulfill? How can I not honor his wishes? How can I not honor his wishes? It's an embarrassment. It's a shame. The answer is, I said. I thought to myself when I was learning this on Wednesday night. We have the book in front of us. Shlomo Melech is our Alter Zeder. He's our Alter Zeder. He's the Alter Zeder praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that his children should walk in the ways of Hashem when we're exiled in the four corners and we are around. And he's saying about us, when my children do teshuva, my children walk in your ways, please listen to their cries. Please listen to them and make life easier for them. That's us. We have it all here. It's such an important and deep idea of honoring our ancestry, of honoring our ancestry. And that's also another dimension of what we're seeing over here with Yaakov, the last will and testament, right? To honor our ancestry, to honor the ancestry, to honor where we come from, as long as it's within the context of halacha, obviously, as we said before. But honoring them and follow and Shlomo Melech, David Melech says Shlomo, make sure to follow the mitzvahs. Make sure to follow. That's what I want for my children. You know, these tangible experiences, tangible reminders help us so much to make it more real and be more serious about it. You know, again, Hashem is a little bit more, so to speak, abstract. Here he is, right? So, you know. But, you know, we can all relate to human beings. We can relate to grandparents. We can relate to great-great-grand. We can relate to people. And if I can picture my great-great-grandfather in my mind, and I know that he wanted me to follow mitzvahs and to do mitzvahs and to have Yerushalayim and to be a good person, then I will do it for him. I want to do it for him, right? Certainly for Kodesh Baruch Hu, but it's a tangible way to relate to this. That's all part of this idea, right? So may we all, you know, may we merit to follow in the ways of our ancestry and to be zocha to have a help along the way by what's called Ibn Neshama, assistance from Shemayim through this form of Ibn Neshama to be able to get the way we want to get to in life and to, you know, to fulfill our purpose.